The Adventures of Batman.
Welcoming you to the new adventures of Batman.
Welcome to episode 22 of Batmanimation, a Batman on Film podcast, revisiting the animated adventures of the Caped Crusader. I'm senior contributor Javi Trujillo, and joining me is the Harbinger of Hasbulla. He is coming to you straight out of Gotham, fellow senior contributor Peter Boudin Pockets Vera.
Wow, that's quite an introduction. I got a lot of nicknames. I didn't realize that. But how is everybody? It's good to be here. I haven't been. When was the last time I was here? Was it with Haas?
It was with Haas.
I can't remember.
For the Harley Quinn episode.
Oh, that's right. I immediately go to old wounds. Yeah, that was fun. But this is gonna be cool too, because this is I've done three shows, I think, in three different cartoons. So I'm all about variety.
Yeah. No. Me too. This is the second time I've been on this series. Or this particular series, I've been bouncing around myself. So unless you count that I did the Batman Beyond series intro with Micah and then the Return of the Joker movie with Herman, I haven't really done a whole lot from the same show. Mm-hmm. So
I was telling you off air, this is a show that I do enjoy Beware the Batman, but I don't think I've ever finished the whole season. I think there's definitely a couple episodes I've missed. It's the show I probably start to rewatch the most, and then I always get cut off at a specific point. So, it's fun to go back to the show, cause I feel like it's kind of a hit. It's kind of a gem that we never really got to see through, finish up, it only got one and done, but, it was pretty bold in what it was trying to do. And it's definitely separated itself from other Batman shows, but, I'm a little disappointed this only lasted one season, because I do enjoy it. I don't know about you, but this is a fun one for me. It's fun to revisit.
I'm pretty much in the same boat. It was such a weird show to begin with, because it was on, unlike Batman the Animated Series or the Batman, which were on, Fox or CW or whatever, this was on Cartoon Network, which... There came a point in my life where I got rid of cable so I could only watch it at work, which was kind of hard to get to. And then you could get it on, I have a few, I think, from iTunes.
This is before you could stream everything free everywhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was if it didn't, until it got a box set, unless you had cable, you were kind of out of luck. Mm-hmm. And so I wound up getting the first Blu-ray, which is the first half of the season. And then only recently bought the second half, because it's one of those Warner Brothers print on demand.
Sets. Is it? I did not know that. Okay.
So when they started announcing they were going to pull certain shows from HBO Max, I'm well, I need to make sure I have this so I have a way to watch it.
It's actually one of the shows I bought digitally a long time ago when I got my first Apple TV, and it's just been in there, and I've had it forever. I've just never finished it, and it's funny because I see everyone rebuying and everything on Blu-ray. These things have been around forever.
Yeah, but it's got a nice little spot on my shelf now, and one of these days I'm going to get to it when I'm not trying to catch up with The Flash and Superman and Lois and God knows how many other streaming shows.
I mean, that's why you got to keep up like me, because I'm nearing the end here. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. All I got is a couple episodes of The Flash, Superman and Lois, and then everyone's favorite show, Gotham Knights, just started. So
that's right. Let's go for the exclusive here right now. Give me a mini review of this week's premiere of Gotham Knights.
If you like MTV's Scream TV show, you'll like Gotham Knights. It's not HBO, it's CW. You know what you're getting. It's all right.
Is it CW CW or CW kind of funded with HBO Max?
It's CW CW. It's all CW. Okay. It's not Superman and Lois. It's CW, which is fine. Just know what you're getting into.
Well, how's Batman in that?
dead.
What very little we see of him. I saw like a picture of like a guy wearing like a bloody mask.
But... Yeah, it's weird. It's not to turn this into a Gotham Knights show, but it's weird to see someone get the better of Batman and finally off him. So I don't know how competent of a Batman this really was.
Is it supposed to be the Gotham Batman? Because that would make sense.
No.
I could see them taking that kid out.
Okay, stop.
That suit has got to be the worst.
He died the first night. Blake died the first night. Nose dive off the roof. Grapple gun didn't work.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think you and I are the only ones on Batman on film that try and keep up with the CW stuff. So...
Yeah.
I haven't had it in me yet, or the time really to dive into that. I may get to it this weekend just to give the first one a shot. I mean, I stuck out Gotham for 1 year before I threw my hands up in the air and walked away. So,
all right.
I figure I'll give this one at least
just watch the pilot and tell me what you think, and we'll take it from there. But we got to steer this back before the old gunslinger gets mad at us. Not Gotham Knights.
Yeah. See, we're doing a freebie right now. We're giving. Extra content.
Yeah, but, Patreon.
But we're here to talk about Beware the Batman, Season 1, Episode 2, Secrets. It aired July 20th in 2013. Oh my God, the show is 10 years old. IMDb says, Batman is kidnapped by Magpie, a deranged villainess. That's about as simple as it gets right there. Anthony Ruiz-Vivar is Batman. J.B. Blanc is Alfred and Lunkhead. Gray Griffin is Magpie, and Margaret Sorrow, who also happens to be, I mean, she's a prolific voice actress. She was Catwoman in the Arkham games, Batman Ninja, and she's done Wonder Woman for like Teen Titans Go and a whole bunch of other things. Sumali Montano is Tatsu Yamashiro. Clarence Boddicker himself, Kurtwood Smith, is Lieutenant James Gordon. Cree Summer is Bethany Ravencroft, and your personal friend Tara Strong is Barbara Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written by Mitch Watson, directed by Rick Morales. I like to do a little thing when I do Batman animations, a little bit of a comic book connect corner. So okay. I do a little comic trivia here. Magpie. I had a hard time trying to figure out when this all happened, because DC Universe Infinite has different dates than like Mike's Amazing World of Comics of what came first. But basically, Magpie debuted sometime in 1986.
I'm going to assume
it was in Man of Steel number 3, which was created by John Byrne, which was published November 5th, 1986, according to some sources.
She has a hell of a haircut.
Yeah. But also, she first appeared in Batman 401, which also has a November of 86 cover date. And since if you look on DC Universe, I think it has Batman 401 coming out before Man of Steel 3. But then Mike's Amazing World of Comics has them coming out like the same day.
Is that what you use for reference? I always use like a fandom wiki.
Mike's Amazing World tends to be pretty accurate.
Okay. I'm going to check that out. I never heard of that one.
That was something I learned from Michael Bailey. So,
okay.
Another podcaster, but either way, Batman 401 does mention meeting her in Man of Steel 3, mm-hmm. because Man of Steel 3 is the first time Batman and Superman meet in the post-crisis continuity. But then Batman 401 is kind of weird because it takes place during like the Legends crossover, which should be post-crisis, but it doesn't seem like we're fully into that post-crisis world yet, because it's right before Year One gets published, which to me feels more of like the start of everything. Because after Year One, you get into the whole Jason Todd reboot.
Look at you, Jason... playing continuity police. Like, yeah. I gave up on continuity after Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yeah.
So Jason in the story is more of a, he's more of like in the Dick Grayson mold than the angsty I'm living on the streets mold. But that's a little bit of Magpie trivia. Also, in those issues, she was Margaret Pie. That was her secret identity.
Oh, God.
But she goes back away.
That feels like new information to me. I always feel like Magpie's always in like back issues that I find. but I never know. I never remember anything about her except she wears like sunglasses. She's got an insane haircut, and she looks like she could probably rival like Madonna and like Gwen Stefani for like rock star of the year.
She's a weird one because like she feels like, to me, she always kind of felt like she should be like this big important villain because she's like the first one they fought in that continuity. And she like just has like this weird look, and that issue was like expensive for a while.
She's with, basically like, Sabacc. There's no point. She's just
she's just gone. Like she never really has much of an impact. Like she's non-speaking in the Lego Batman movie. She pops up like here and there. I think she got killed in some version of a Suicide Squad at some point.
Oh, who hasn't?
But yeah.
Who hasn't besides Harley Quinn? Like they just killed, they've killed Deadshot.
Oh my God. Yeah. So she's just one of those ones where I feel like she should have been more of a big deal, but she didn't have any staying power. She's not Bane, you know? So her main objective is just, well, it's a little complicated because in the comics, she's very much all about the shiny things. And this that carries over to the show too, but here she's just more about, she's about the shiny, as she likes to say, but there's a method to her madness. And as Batman finds her attacking some guy whose watch is missing, and he's just kind of blubbering on the floor.
Magpie is like your typical example of like late 80s, early 90s type villain, right? Who is way more about the look than anything else. So when you can take that character and kind of put your own little twist on it, no one really cares because she's not that big of a deal to begin with. So like it's what you're saying is right, because it's close enough. She's close enough to what she is source materialized, right? But then it's like they add their own little twist, which is fine, which the show does a lot and pretty well, actually. You know, like, you know, like Magpie is like, she's very comparable to like Alfred in the sense of like, for the first time, I feel like, right. Like what came out? Was it this or Earth One? Like seeing that really physical military style Alfred, you know, like, but he's still Alfred. Like he still cares about Bruce. He takes care of Bruce. All this stuff he does, but you know, but they put their own little twist on it, you know?
Yeah. I remember I mentioned that when I did the episode with Bill, where we talked about this version of Alfred being similar to Earth One, and I don't remember which one came first now. You have to go back and listen to that episode. Yeah, I don't remember, but I feel like this Magpie, her look is very similar to the comic one, but minus the glasses. But she's kind of got like an Earth Three crime syndicate Black Canary vibe. If you think about it, she's got like the fishnets and
look at you go for the deep cut
and the cleavage. Like she seems like she would be like an evil Black Canary on some alternate Earth. Then they do something with her too, where they kind of make her, and maybe this is just me going into her casting a little bit, but she tries to have some like Catwoman style flirty energy with Batman. And he's not having it at all.
Yeah.
But there's some like suggestive stuff.
For the record, Earth One came out a year before Beware the Batman, 2012, 2013. So probably was inspired by Geoff Johns, that snake. But yeah, so just to answer that. But yeah, no. Oh my God. You know what this show does that I love is that it really adheres to like the moral code of Batman.
Yeah.
You know? Like, as I'm watching it as we're talking, and Magpie is just, I wish he had, like, you know, what was the name of, was it Cynthia? Angelica's doll from Rugrats? Like, that's what I think of Magpie. I think of Cynthia's hair. It doesn't make any sense. It's all, like, sticking out. Like, that's what I miss. But, like, I dig, like, Batman's just moral code overall. Like, I feel like this show really captures that probably the best since BTAS.
Yeah.
When you're looking at it,
it's weird because it's obviously we're early in his career because he's still kind of got like that mythological status, and Gordon is Lieutenant Gordon, and Gordon doesn't like him at all. So we're pretty early on, but.
And I love that, to be honest with you. I love the earning of the trust.
But at the same time, he feels very developed as a character. Like there's a lot of like detective work in this episode that I really appreciated. Like of Batman,
and the Bruce Wayne's polished. You know, yeah. it's not like Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins. Like when you see Bruce Wayne in this show, he's very like, he's just in his prime, really. You know, like,
yeah, he's very smooth. Very
it doesn't feel cut. Like rookie Bruce Wayne or rookie Batman at all in the show, even though it is, like you said, very polished overall.
Yeah, he's got like the moves, and he's got like that Conroy smoothness when it comes to him talking as Bruce. But he does it with like, oh, I noticed that when you talk to Alfred, Miss Yamashiro, that your eyes are always looking up like you would when you were a child. And it's just little details like that that he has as both Batman and Bruce Wayne that really make this an interesting take on Batman, because you've got, you know, the youth, but then you've got this unexplored era of like 80s Batman with characters like Magpie and Anarchy that we'll get to at some point, and the general outsider influence that make it stand out from
which
all
I think
shows.
Worked for and against the show. When you think about it, I think them trying to be so different than every other Batman animated show that came out, like you think there's no Robin, no Batgirl, really. Barbara Gordon's in it, obviously. And we get that great description at one point. I forget what episode it is, but Batman and Barbara have a discussion on grapnel or grapple gun. And
nice.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, actually. It's probably my favorite moment of the show. But, you know, the outsider influence, I think it was part of the downfall of the show, but I still at that same doing an outsider's angle. Because, like, we'll never see, I don't think we'll ever see anything like this again.
I think more than that, though, what really hurt it, given that it was Cartoon Network, is there were no toys. Like there was a figure that was part of
the
Mattel line.
Like Unlimited or something like that. It was the orange and yellow packaging. I remember that. It was the one figure. That's it.
I mean, that was like Cartoon Network's bread and butter was, you know, being able to sell toys off of it to help support the show and bringing that money. Cause like Justice League and Justice League Unlimited had dozens upon dozons of figures coming out.
How many
do you
own? How many Justice League Unlimited figures do you have
now? Not too many. And I wound up giving them all to Jack and Evelyn to play with. Cause I'm like, okay, like I have more museum type figures from like the DC Direct days that I had on display, and I let them
get more hot toys than you do.
but we had quite a few. I had, you know, cause you would get like those weird packs. There'd be like a 3-pack of people
they all come in that like pre-posed. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can only really move the legs.
they were really inexpensive too. They were like $5 or $7 back in the day, because there wasn't a lot to it. It was that old
funny,
Star like, Wars articulation of like five points and maybe an accessory, but they look cool.
That's funny. It's funny. Like, you mentioned old toys and stuff, and I'm like looking back at just yesterday because of the Flash toys were released, and I was reading a back issue of Action Comics, and there's an ad for DC Direct, and it's got like Green Lantern, Batman, and Catwoman. And I was like, you guys have no idea how good you have it with even action figures these days. Like, I remember the only place I could get a Hush Batman was through DC Direct, and that's not that long ago. Meanwhile, McFarlane's making $250 Batwings.
Yeah. That is insane, because I've seen the quality of his other vehicles.
He makes great vehicles. His vehicles are no joke.
Yeah, but I mean they're really inexpensive for, you know, what you get. I think. And so I was like, $60 Batmobile. Okay. All right. It looks pretty big. It looks substantial. Sure. And then
I don't
$250
like
the
Batmobile
for the Batwing.
Oh, that's crazy. I have no space to mount that on my wall. I don't like the Batmobile and Beware the Batman. It's probably the only negative I have on the show, to be honest with you.
I think it's fine. It's different. It complements this Batman, I think. But it's also, I don't know, it's not as defined as some of the other ones, I feel like. Because trying to picture it right now, it's like, it's not as iconic as like, the BTAS one.
It has no screen time. That's probably why.
Yeah.
Going back to our B-dubs conversation, like I'm like I said, I'm watching the show as we're doing the show. And right now he walks into like the therapist's office and I'm instantly getting like Forever vibes.
Yes.
But at the same time, he's just, he's way cooler and way sexier. Like, but he's still studying everything. Like it's funny how just like perfect this Bruce Wayne can be at times, you know? And then he's got the James Bond stuff on his watch. And I was like, wow, man, like this is really like people need to start watching this cartoon because it is, it's Bruce Wayne is on a different level than every other show, to be brutally honest.
No, that's probably my favorite scene from this episode because, like you said, it's got that Chase Meridian inkblots vibe going in.
Yes.
But there's so much going on because he's checking her out and kind of like comparing mentally of like what Magpie looks like without her costume on. And then he sees the inkblot. And of course, you know, it's something that takes him back to the night his parents were killed. And so they do that great flash between the inkblot and then like his parents lying in the gutter, you know, for no reason at all. And
oh, look at you, Affleck.
it's got a lot of depth for like a Saturday morning cartoon. Like he contrasts that with like Gordon meeting Lunkhead, who's, you know, monosyllabic and
but that, and like as then wants he's like
candy bars
raiding the desk and he's instantly thinking tan lines and he's thinking of abandoned building, you know, like you could just see the gears working and it's like I was like I'm sitting here and like I don't even have the sound on and my I'm like I'm impressed by him walking through the halls of just these abandoned buildings. It does you know what else it does, it matches, I want to say it matches Batman 89 in terms of like shadows. You know, I feel like Batman was always in the shadows in that movie. In this episode, for the most part, Batman's always in some sort of shadowy environment. I like that. It creates that like spooky element, you know, that, I think you said earlier, that mythical kind of like, you know, assumption of Batman, right? Like he's not a man, he's a monster, you know, that type of thing early on in the career.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to take just a quick break for a word from our sponsors. And we're back. So one thing I wanted to ask you about, since you have met Tara Strong and interviewed her for Batman on Film, what do you think of her, Barbara Gordon, in this show, in this episode particularly?
It's good. I mean, Tara always does amazing work. So it's fun to see her. I mean, her catalog for me is always Harley Quinn. So whenever I see her do something, and I know she's done other characters and other shows and so on and so forth, but I always go to Harley Quinn. So it's fun to hear her not kind of try to do like a semi Brooklyn accent. You know, it's different, but I appreciate it. I don't know who did, if I had to compare her to another voice actress doing Batgirl, I'd have to compare whoever did it for BTAZ. I forget who did it in BTAZ.
It was her.
Was later. It her in BTAZ? It was her later.
Originally, it was someone else, and her name eludes me now.
Yeah, I always think of the. I'm always thinking of blue and like gray. That early on Batgirl.
I don't know
if that was Tara.
Well, later it became Tara Charandoff before she got married and became Tara Strong.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what threw me off. I never knew.
I want to say it's Melissa. It was Melissa someone, though, in the early episodes. And I can't remember the rest of her name because I just think Melissa and I think Benoist, which is not the right answer for this.
It's way off right there.
Yeah. She's someone, though. She was someone
Melissa
big.
Melissa Gilbert?
Melissa Gilbert, maybe.
Yeah.
That's I don't know. Great podcast.
So she was Melissa Gilbert, Mary Kay Bregman, and Tara Strong. That's the order of voice of talent.
For Batman. And Tara Strong was more of like the new Batman Adventures, and like Mystery of the Batwoman era.
But it's fine. I mean, Tara
and Return of the Joker too.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. You know who always surprised whenever I hear them on the show is Kurtwood Smith.
Yes.
His Gordon actually I enjoy a lot. Like I kind of feel like that's how I would expect Gordon to sound, like that kind of like rough, tough, you know, Red Foreman voice. You know, that's kind of what I think of. That's kind of what I think of when I think of Gordon a little bit, you know?
No, I think he does a really good job. He would be a great Gordon in live action too, I feel like. I mean, now
you think so? I don't know.
Now he's getting up there, but I really like
his good voice.
And I could see him doing, he's one of those weird guys because my first experience with him was RoboCop. mm-hmm. where he's just the ultimate bad yeah. guy in that, you know. Yeah. But then he's done like other things where he's been more benevolent. Like he's done like some Star Trek stuff and obviously that 70s show. But I always think of him as more of like the bad guy just because he's so good at bringing that. But in here, he does a really good job channeling that younger Gordon. I feel like his voice just has a good tone.
Yeah.
And he's got like a world weariness to him because he's always, I don't know, he just seems weathered. And I mean that as a compliment. Like he can embody that well. And it struck me on this time too, watching it, that Barbara looks a lot like Carrie Kelly in this series. Like the scene where she's having breakfast.
Oh, I never thought of that. Gordon. That's a good call.
She's got like the short red hair and she's got like the black glasses. I'm like, she's kind of got like a Carrie Kelly thing going on.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. Barbara, I guess Barbara traditionally has longer hair, but she's always been redhead with glasses. So
yeah.
Now I'm like, are the glasses green? I'm like, look, yeah, I'm waiting for Barbara to pop up on screen. Like you can't be Carrie Kelly without your green glasses, but that's a cool call. That's a cool ball. I like that. Overall. This design is so distinct
for the Batman? Show.
For the characters in general. Like,
yeah,
I enjoy it. Like at first it was kind of jarring for me to get used to, but I got used to it really quickly. And it was
supposed to be the future.
So this was like a Batman Beyond?
No. Like what I mean, like the future of animation, because like the Pixar stuff was doing really well. And the vibe at the time was like, okay, kids don't like, you know, that flat cell shaded animation. Everything's got to be kind of CGI-ish.
Really?
So this is when they dumped like, you know, the Justice League show, and they were trying to do more CG cartoons, which is why we have that Green Lantern series also in this CGI style.
Yeah, that's a great like series, by the way.
These two were like leading the charge for that because this was supposed to be how animation was going to be going forward. And
really?
as we know by now, that's not what happened 10 years later. And that I feel like this style of animation has kind of gone by the wayside. If you look at, I mean, there's still CGI stuff in cartoons, but it's not like this. This style is more for like Batwheels type shows.
Okay, yeah, I get that. I dig that.
You know, other than like the Star Wars stuff on Disney Plus, the animated shows that tend to kind of keep this. That was the other thing, because like between this and Green Lantern, the Star Wars Clone Wars show was also in this kind of CGI animation style.
All right.
That seemed to be like what was going to.
I appreciate it for what it is now. You know, like at first you're kind of like, oh, what is this? But like the show is actually very, very well written, and it's so well written to the point where you don't care about the animation. It becomes like second nature.
You know? Yeah.
Like you're just watching it and it's no big deal.
No, I mean, this is the second episode, but like everyone is really well fleshed out. Alfred, you know, we get to see like the acting side of him, mm-hmm. where he puts on a little voice mm-hmm. to call the office, and even like the identity of Magpie. Like it's not dumbed down for like a Saturday morning audience. It's there's some question of who she is, and it gets all tied in with one of her, one of the people working at the office that Bruce is visiting. And it's very comic booky, but it's also, it deviates from like the source material in an interesting way.
I wouldn't exactly call this a kid's cartoon, to be honest with you. You know, it seems to be pretty, it kind of teeters the line as well as BTAS does. Like, I feel like the Batman is a little bit more geared towards kids. I feel like it's way more geared towards kids than either this or BTAS, in my opinion. You know, this seems like it's got a little bit more of a mature taste to it.
Yeah, I always kind of felt the Batman was more of like it was trying to be dark and edgy because of like the designs, but it did have like those kiddie aspects. For me, like this one, the only thing that really strikes me is like aiming for like the younger kid audience is the character of Lunkhead, which is, he's kind of like their version of Amygdala. but with a big lump, like bump on his head.
Yeah.
He talks simple in a way that I feel like a kid would think is funny, but otherwise, like it's complicated. Like the mystery of who Magpie is, isn't cut and dried, which is something I really appreciated because I forgot that it wasn't the obvious solution.
Mm. Also like two episodes in, you get a really good sense of just Batman overall, the world of this Batman overall, you know, like you've pretty much seen all the major cast of characters that, you know, you're going to follow throughout. You have Batman, you have Gordon, you have Alfred, you know, you know what you're getting into and, you know, kind of where the show would direct you. Cause it's just like, you just get a really good vibe of everything going on. And between this episode and the first episode, I think it does a really good job of just introducing everything to you.
Yeah, and it's one of those too where it's like, this is a standalone episode. You can just watch it, jump mm-hmm. right in, and it's fine. But there's little elements that are serialized, like with his relationship with Tatsu, that if you watch it from episode 1 to episode 22, whatever it is, like there's a full story going on as well that make it really interesting to watch.
Does she ever get like full katana costume?
I want to say she does because she's got it in the credits.
Okay.
So
I want to see it happen at some point. Yeah. It definitely happens at like one of the last two episodes of the season. It definitely, you know, was it, when did Daredevil get his suit in that show?
Like, oh my
season
God.
Two.
Only to lose it again for all of season 3.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. No, this is this show really, I where do you think this show falls on people's rewatch list? Because I honestly, I don't hear a lot of people talking about it.
I don't think it falls on anyone's list, really.
It really is kind of a hidden gem. You know, it's funny hearing that, you know, I hear people talk about the Batman, the animated show, way more than this. I mean, BTAS is BTAS. It's obviously the Holy Grail and what was it? The Adventures of Batman just got the Blu-ray release, I believe. Is that yeah. that one? You know, but like you watch that, you might as well be watching like season 5 of 66. That's how I look at that cartoon. Like, it's like the ultra campy of the camp.
Yeah, but like the Batman had 5 or 6 seasons.
I want to say 5.
And a direct-to-video movie, and it's Batman got a Blu-ray box set. There were dozens of toys. Jack still has his yellow scuba diver Batman figure from that line.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was very toyetic, as they like to say. So that made yeah. an imprint, I think, on a generation. The same way that the Brave and the Bold did, because that also...
Oh, I forget. I don't like Brave and the Bold, so I always forget about it.
But, I mean, it had 3 seasons, and it had lots of toys also.
Mm-hmm.
And it even had a video game. So like that,
I didn't know that
made, it was like a DS game.
Okay.
I think Jack had it on his Nintendo DS, but it permeated the way, and it's still a thing, right? Cause it wasn't that long ago that the Brave and the Bold meets Scooby-Doo came out. You know,
these are all Lauer questions.
Yeah. So like this didn't have that impact. It was on a network. I mean, it was Cartoon Network, so I mean, Brave and the Bold was too, but like it got, if I remember right, it got moved around a bit on where it was being shown, and it didn't just permeate. The tie-in comic didn't last very long from what I remember, and they never really did anything with it after it, so it just kind of stagnated,
yeah.
I think, in the general Batman conversation. But that's one of the reasons why we're hitting it up, one, so we have content, but two, because it's something that should be talked about.
Yeah, that's why when you like hit me up, hey, I want to do this, I want to do Beware the Batman, and I'm like, all right, that's great, because you want to know, like, it's not something I really watch on the reg. I mean, BTAS is constantly being played in my house. I mean, I'm sorry, it just is. Like I said, I mentioned Adventures. I mean, I've had that digitally forever because they were cheap on iTunes. So like I bought these things, you know, these cartoons are dirt cheap before they realize they can make money off Blu-rays again. But like, you know, I've been watching that stuff, but like recently, but like this, I honestly, even I forget about this show. Like I just do. you know, it is the show I think that most Bat fans have forgotten, because like you said, it doesn't have the staying power. It didn't have that generational turn that even the Batman had. You know, you can't grow up with this because it only lasted one season. Yeah,
no,
you know, it's impossible. Like that's why it's so easily forgotten.
And I don't think branching out into the different areas hurt it as much. Like, because to me, it made it interesting. The fact that we got like this weird blend of like we mentioned the 80s stuff, but then the first episode has Pig and Toad, which were at that point only like
a your year favorite or two writer, old. Grant Morrison.
Yeah. So, like, it was a cool blend of all the of modern and Bronze Age.
This first episode of the series is one of my favorite Batman episodes of all time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because of Professor Pig and Toad. I was like, that's how you get, if you're going to, like, for a fan's perspective, that's kind of how you get me. Like, you know, I get it. At some point, you're going to do Joker, right? And, like, you'll be around or whatever. But Professor Pig, I'd love to see him in a movie or another cartoon, but this is what I got. I think it was great. It really was, for me at least. You know, doing a new villain, I appreciate that. And I like the variety. You know, we get, like, Batman's got such an iconic rogues gallery that you kind of get hung up on certain characters.
Right.
So it's like it when they take a shot on something else. You know, even like Magpie. Two episodes in, you got Professor Pig and Magpie. Like, to me, that's kind of cool. And then I don't mind starting off with low-level villains to work my way up, you know?
Yeah. And then we get Anarchy, which was a big character in the late 80s, early 90s under Alan Grant. Like, he used him a lot. He even had his own series for a little bit. I want to say Breyfogle did the art on it when they launched it. But,
you know, that's a character who, you know, doesn't really get a whole lot of screen time, let's be honest.
No, I mean, he's barely a side mission in like the Arkham games. So you know? He's not one of the big four, you know, like Batman 66, you know, for good or ill, like made those top four villains, the ones that it showed in the movie. And that while I like seeing them, I like seeing the different takes. Cause like we just saw with the Batman, the movie, like you can do different things with them and still have them be those characters.
Yeah.
But it's nice to get into the weeds a little bit and get some of these more off the beaten path. Characters that don't get the love that the main core group gets.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Well, even still, like, it's been a long time since Oswald got the proper treatment, you know, like, I'm not counting that abomination that was on Fox.
So. But we're not going to see One Bad Day Magpie anytime soon.
Which I'm good with. I'm more than content having her pop up in one episode of a random Batman cartoon show. That's totally fine. I'm totally fine with that.
This might be actually her best, and she does show up later in this show once more, I think, but this might be like her best iteration. Like, I think I like this more than I like the comic book version.
Probably just because it's probably the most fresh version in my head, to be honest with you. But I tell you, I miss the hair. Magpie's always got a very distinctive haircut.
She does.
I'm a little bummed out they didn't do it in this show.
If Todd McFarlane made a figure, would you go buy her?
Oh.
Would you put her on the shelf, or would you just be like, oh, that's cool?
That's so weird. I don't know. I actually don't know. If I saw it, I would be so shocked. I'd be like, did someone like customize this and put this on the shelf? Magpie. I can't. He probably would. He probably would. I don't know.
It's like every now and then, like, you get like a shriek from him, and it's like, why shriek from Batman Beyond? It's like those things are just, they're probably still clogging up the Target toy shelves, and they've been out for like a year or two at least.
I guess. I don't know. He did Blight too, but like, how many real Batman Beyond villains are, I'm not a huge Batman Beyond fan, so like, random Jokers, like, I don't know, like,
yeah,
hardcore Batman Beyond villains,
yeah,
10. I don't know. I don't know what other figures you could get from Batman Beyond. Old Man Wayne, definitely.
Yeah, he should have done one of those. That would... He did that weird Futures End Batman Joker hybrid. That was the Build-A-Figure, but
he doesn't like doing guys in suits. So, like, just be happy you got a Penguin.
Yeah,
be happy the Penguin was that important to the movie that he had to make an ugly fat guy in a suit. So, just know he hates doing that. So, be very grateful.
Well, Pete, let's wrap this up, man. Tell people where we can find you, all the myriad places.
Yeah, definitely. You can find me all over social media. That's Twitter, Instagram, Mastodon, and Zack Snyder's favorite platform, Vero, at Pete Illustrated. My Instagram account is the largest Hasbulla fan page in the state of New Jersey, so check that out. Check out Straight_O_G. That's Straight Outta Gotham on Twitter and Instagram. That's a podcast, a news-based podcast I co-host with the champion of Long Island, Eric Holzman. I also co-host a Spider-Man-themed podcast with Nicholas and Nico Caruso. That is at Italians for Spidey on Twitter. Check that out. Check out at Team Yellow Over on Twitter because we're doing a lot of fun stuff because of Keaton's return, and there's been an amazing amount of action figures released with that little oval. I'm all over batmanfilm.com and Batman and Film YouTube, so check that stuff out. I have comic book reviews, toy reviews, all that jazz. I've interviewed Tara Strong. She's up there. She's in this episode, so check that out if you want to listen to her talk about Harley Quinn. And that seems to be really it. I think that's it. Oh, and every month I'm on the Batman Book Club with Ryan Lauer.
Batman Book Club.
Yeah. Discussing all the monthly Batman titles.
But there's no frolicking when Peter is there. Just be forewarned.
Men don't frolic.
Let's see. I've got, obviously, Batman Animation. Lots of episodes of that covering all sorts of different Batman in animation form content. What am I reviewing, Peter?
I can't keep up with my reviews.
Yeah, right. Gotham City Year One, which the final issue comes out the end of this month.
Really Batman,
The Adventures Continue Season 3, which is kind of Batman Animation influenced. Catwoman. I think that's all I'm doing for the moment until The Brave and the Bold comes out. So yeah, you can find those written reviews on batmanonfilm.com. Also, I review 007 for the James Bond dossier.com, which is a James Bond comic on from Dynamite Comics.
I'm not feeling this one.
I'm not digging the art, but I like Philip Kennedy Johnson. He's writing Action Comics right now, and I think he's doing a good job with the writing portion of 007. And
it's not bad. I just think the others have been better.
The new arc starts, I think, in April, which will be a new artist. So hopefully that elevates it a little bit more, because I've been enjoying his writing. And then I've got my own YouTube show that just launched. It's The Flash Up to Speed with Wally West. You can find it on Twitter at Up to Speed 5 or on Instagram at Up to Speed with Wally West. And basically the whole point of the show is to get you caught up with the history of Wally West. I did a Zero episode that just came out last week, which is basically a little brief history of my fandom for the character and his first appearance in The Flash 110. Which is a Barry Allen issue, obviously.
I want you to know Javi's lying to you. The whole point of the show is to get everyone to hate Barry Allen.
And then from here on out, we're going to cover in order the main Wally series that started after Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then we're going to talk about the end of the CW show, the movie coming out in June, and some other odds and ends. So
Javi's protesting the movie because it stars Barry Allen, and he's happy the CW show ends because it stars Barry Allen.
I am happy the CW show is ending because season 8 was not its best. So it may season be time to give it a rest.
I thought Armageddon was great.
It got better. But if you took a shot for every time someone in an episode says level up, you would be plastered by the end of that show.
And I don't understand how that's a complaint, really.
I don't know. The writing is just not what it used to be, man. It's not. Like, I've been watching the show on when I take breaks and I'm on the treadmill. And, like, I'm like on season 4 right now. Like, it's still, to me, it's still good. I know lots of people dropped off at the end of season 2. or season three, but season I'm still really enjoying the older seasons, but the current stuff, season eight was not for me. So far, season nine is been a much better.
Season eight was definitely a mixed bag. I'll give you that. But season seven, I really liked. And I liked Armageddon.
I don't care about the new side characters. I miss Sisko and Wells and.
I'll give you that much. Yeah, I miss them, but I wish it was more about Barry and less about certain side characters.
Yeah.
Not to off on a flash tangent here.
Yeah, but that's where you can find us. Of course, always. BatmanOnFilm.com, where we're a scoop site, right?
Yeah, according to a couple of morons on Twitter.
Yeah, so now you can find all this great content on BatmanOnFilm.com or the Batman Podcast Network. And with that, thank you for listening, and we're going to have announcer Rachel take us out.
Thanks for listening to Batmanimation, a BatmanOnFilm.com podcast revisiting the animated TV and film adventures of the Caped Crusader. Follow Batmanimation on Twitter at Batmanimation. Follow BOF on Twitter at The Batman on Film. Follow Jet on Twitter at Batman on Film. For Jet and Team BOF, I'm announcer Rachel. Batman on Film, authoritative, definitive, the original, established in 1998.